From Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Hope everybody doing well. It's miserable if you have to be outside for very long in this kind of heat. So, yes, if you don't have to, don't. And if you have to, hydrate, get shade as quickly as possible, and get out of it as quickly as possible. With that said, though, we got an update in the last half hour from Auburn. They have changed their practice schedule, at least their first couple of days of practice. Remember, we'd had word that and had scheduled that practice was going to be at around 9:45, and we'd have player interviews at 11:45. Practice has now been moved to 3:30 tomorrow and Thursday, at least here for the first week. Now, these are not full pads. Remember, the first couple of days of practice are in shorts, but it will be very, very hot and humid for the first couple of days. Maybe they want to see how good a shape everybody is actually in on the first couple of days of practice. So with that said, welcome in, everybody, to the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio, Drew at the controls. Dan, that means we're not going to be able to see practice, but we also won't be, I would be... not glistening, I would be perspiring heavily and probably in danger of heat stroke, like some poor members of the press are going to be tomorrow, I think.
Yeah, it's a curious decision. I wonder how much of it, you know, especially now that we know it's going to be in the afternoon, I wonder how much of it will actually be fully outdoors and how much of it could be
right
inside the
I'm sure it will.
The comfortable settings they have inside, you know, the comfortable, well, you know, the Walt. Which is where I know they're doing the press conference before. Has that moved? Or is
yeah,
that
no,
still...
the press conference is still at 9 a.m.
Interesting, yeah.
And it'll be a press conference with Hugh Freeze at 9, then nothing again until practice gets started at 3:30 for the viewing window. And then the player interviews, which were scheduled to be around 11:45, have been moved to 5 o'clock.
Yeah, my skepticism of their ability to move practice to a fully, you know, everything in the morning type of schedule was going to be when classes start. You were going to have a hard time, seemingly.
Well, I've heard that schedules were made and the players' schedules can accommodate mornings. I'm really thinking now this is something getting ready for Baylor. And also, all right, we've had spring, we've had the summer workouts, we've had the captain's workouts, things like that. Now let's see. It's an opportunity to put them out there in the heat because it's going to be hot when Auburn opens the season in Waco.
But even if you cleared the schedules, that still wouldn't impact these first few weeks, right?
I mean, no, that's why I think these may be aiming more toward that, you know, that first game and making sure that everybody is in the kind of shape that you want them to be in. I don't know. I mean, we can ask you that tomorrow.
Yeah, there's some strategy behind it.
Will be less pleasant at 3:30 tomorrow afternoon than it would be at 9:45 tomorrow morning.
Yeah, it could be a necessity. It could be strategy. That is an interesting thing to ask Coach Freeze about tomorrow. And yeah, I think that's we talked about it a little bit on the Observer podcast. These are crucial. You can pick different players on the roster where it's like these are crucial practices to firm up your spot in the rotation. To, you know, there are some spots on the Bill Cameron depth chart where there's competition, right?
Oh yeah, there are quite a few where there's competition.
You know, where there's you know, probably more players than there are spots, and that's something that is going to get sorted out. And I can understand maybe having the urgency of the Baylor game on your mind too when you schedule these practices, because you have a night game on the road in what like you said will probably be, you know, pretty unforgiving conditions weather-wise. You know, you do get the benefit of it being at night and not at noon, but otherwise it's going to be it's going to be Texas in the late afternoon, early evening.
Yeah.
In August. So yeah, I can understand wanting to make sure your team is ready from an endurance and stamina standpoint when you think about. And again, we've talked about, you know, Norman, Oklahoma. Maybe, you know, that could be a day game.
I doubt any of the. I mean, it's not like Auburn is traveling anywhere out of the South or an area where you would expect it to be, you know, much milder.
Yeah, you could be talking about both the Oklahoma and A&M games.
I'm telling you, A&M was really hot 2 years ago.
Yeah, so you've got multiple games early in the season where, yeah, you probably want to make sure your team is ready to go from, or if you can simulate the conditions that they're going to face in those games, it's probably to your benefit, and maybe that's what Hugh Freeze is doing by moving these practices to the late afternoon.
Yeah, so, I mean, that is something that just happened, like I said, in the last half hour or so. Interesting report earlier today, though, from J.G. Tate over at AuburnSports.com, writing that he is expecting Malcolm Simmons to be out there and be going through the full practices with the team, that he was talking about reporting day being today and expected a full roster report, including Malcolm Simmons, and expects him to be practicing tomorrow.
Yeah, it's, you know, if it ends up being the case, you know, I think it's probably a surprise compared to what folks were expecting a couple of days ago. We'll see. That's probably something else Hugh Freeze will be asked about tomorrow morning.
I'm sure it is. I mean, I've had two people quite adamantly tell me, "What country do we live in? Aren't you innocent until proven guilty?" And it's like, well, you're right.
You're innocent until proven guilty. I also understand why a school would say, you know, playing for a college football team or a college basketball team is a privilege, and if you're facing serious enough charges, even without a conviction, a school might be reluctant to keep you included on the active roster and or keep you as an, you know, and I guess.
And I'd say that's more, that would be more likely if we were in season
right
now. Since this is preseason practice and he has a court date scheduled for August 13th, which is before classes or the season gets started.
I would also point out we've seen situations, multiple situations in the last few years where a player has been a full participant in preseason practice and then has not played in the opener or has not played in the first few games of the season. And so it could be a situation where they feel comfortable considering what they know. They feel comfortable letting Malcolm participate in practice. And then if Malcolm is a participant tomorrow, the question would then be, would he be available for the game at Baylor? Which I think is a different question.
Yes. Oh, yes. Indeed.
Is he available for practice tomorrow? And yeah, you know, I can understand. You know, I can understand why folks would. I can understand why folks would be skeptical either way of the decision to include Malcolm or the decision to have him sidelined while you decide this. But yeah, I'd be more surprised, unless the situation changes, I'd be more surprised to see him in Waco than necessarily practicing with the team. I'd say that becomes a separate question, right?
Yeah, well, it does.
His availability to play the game.
And I think the likelihood of something being resolved where you know, where you have a much better idea of that. But yes, that has to be much more questionable than practicing with a team. So,
and you have multiple weeks to decide that.
Right, that's exactly right. You got four weeks from Friday.
Would you be surprised to see Malcolm Simmons out there practicing tomorrow?
No. Okay. No, I mean, I think JG's got really good sources.
But even before the JG report, if I had told you, like, If we found out tomorrow, like that Malcolm was
out
there.
No, I wouldn't say. I mean, you know, they're this is something that is on the athletic department, the administration, and Auburn and what they have. And if it is, you know, if it is questionable at best, then I would say that sure, it's not a shock that he'd be able to go through practice. So that's,
I mean, it's serious enough that he is facing the charges.
He's been on the roster. Yeah. He's never been removed from the roster. Yep. We've seen the roster update with weight changes and things like that, and he has been on it the entire time. So that would probably tell you that it's not a big surprise that he's going to be practicing tomorrow.
I kind of thought they might keep him on the team but not have him participating and just sort of say he's focusing on other very serious things in his life right now. But if they make the decision that they want Malcolm, you know, with them and maybe available in case this is resolved in his favor, then I'd say I think it's understandable that they would, you know, they have a long time until they have to make the decision about whether or not he's,
and they can still get work. It's not at receiver. We've talked about the depth that Auburn has, but I think there should be plenty of opportunity for all of the players to be able to get enough work in case Malcolm or any of them aren't able to go, that they would know who would be ready in case.
And the risk is seeming, or actually not just seeming, right, soft on domestic violence or the seriousness of the accusations.
Depending on the facts that come out.
Right.
But I mean, yes, that is one of the first things you're going to hear from outside is going to be Auburn doesn't care about that. They just care about trying to win. But that's what you're going to hear anywhere when there's something like that going on, and each case has to be handled by the people in charge making the decisions as to, you know, who's going to suit up, who's going to be able to play. So that's some of the news from the day.
Yeah, I'm sort of thinking, like, aside from Malcolm, and that does shake things up a little bit, but, like, are there players or positions that you're curious about, Bill? I mean, it's I guess not so much where are we going to be looking, because the times is, you know, the time has changed a little bit, but as far as, like, you know, what groups or players might have your eye these first few weeks of preseason practice?
Probably the both lines of scrimmage.
Okay.
On both sides. I mean, I just want to see how they things look like as far as coming together on the offensive line, and then watching some of the newcomers on the defensive side and see how they step up. So
it feels. I mean, it's tough to. Oh, do we? Okay. Oh, very cool. Okay.
Yeah, we'll talk more about that, but we're going to check in with the voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham, here momentarily. So we'll go ahead and get to our first break of the afternoon. Stick with us. We're just underway here on the Tuesday Drive.
Yeah. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck. Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill and Dan here in the studio, Drew at the controls, and we're going to head to The Drive hotline and welcome back in the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham. Andy, how's the little break gone?
It has gone well. It has ended, and now we begin.
Yeah, followed some of the travels that you made. Yeah. Looked like you guys had a great time.
We did. We were in New York City for a couple days and got to see some shows and have some fabulous meals and just get away for a little bit. And right back at it and getting ready for the first day of practice tomorrow, Bill.
Yep, recharge the batteries, ready to go. I'll tell you what, it is going to be a hot time for the next couple of days now that practice has been moved from the morning, which had originally been scheduled to 3:30 the next couple of days.
Yeah, you're right. I was expecting it to be 9 o'clock tomorrow and Thursday, and was notified, like you, that practice is going to be at 3:30 tomorrow and Thursday now. So, yeah, it's going to be a warm one, and getting ready and just getting used to the very, very hot weather. So we'll see you out there after Coach Freeze's press conference tomorrow morning, which will be very, very interesting, I think. A lot of questions coming his way, hopefully a lot of answers as Auburn gets set for this very, very important season.
Man, it's a hot one, as the Santana and Rob Thomas song. You can hear that on Wings 94.3, which carries Auburn sports. Andy, good to talk to you again. I missed our little visits. Can't wait to hear more about how you spent your summer vacation. But in the meantime, you know, I was just asking Bill before the break. And you're out there paying very close attention during preseason practice. Is there a position group or a player that you're going to find yourself gravitating towards when things get started tomorrow?
I'm going to start up front in the trenches. Is this offensive line mm-hmm. as good as we believe it can be? One, I think it has the potential to be as good an offensive line as Auburn's had in quite some time. Seems to be the most settled that an offensive line has been going into this part of the season. On the other hand, especially interior defensive line, I think there's a lot of questions to be answered there. I think Auburn has talent there. It certainly has the bodies, but will the depth develop at the nose tackle and the defensive tackle spot? Those are two positions that I look forward to watching. Another, and guys, it's been a long time since Auburn has gone into a season where it hasn't had the guy at tailback.
Mm, right.
Going on. And from Tank to Jarquez in the last couple of years, I mean, we knew those were the guys going into the season. And the question was, what was the depth behind those two? And Auburn has depth. And Auburn has some players that have logged some minutes, especially Damari Alston and Jeremiah Cobb. But what happens after that? And does one of those two emerge as the guy? Or does Auburn go into the season really with a tailback by committee? I think that's something that I'm going to pay attention to. A lot of folks will. In preseason practices in fall camp, which starts tomorrow.
Yeah, no question.
And I mean, listen, the obvious is quarterback. Guys, I mean, listen, I mean, with Jackson Armour, I think Auburn liked what it saw from Jackson in spring ball. They've liked what they've seen from him this summer. But now it starts to pay off for Auburn. And what does Auburn see from Jackson moving forward now? Because I think he's the guy at quarterback. Now, who's the number two? Perhaps that's still a question mark. Mm-hmm. Between Deuce Knight and Ashton Daniels at this point. So there are a lot of questions to be answered at this point. How effective will Alex McPherson be at the kicking spot for Auburn? We know how important that was a year ago. It cost Auburn some ball games. And to get him back and hopefully healthy and as accurate as he was 2 years ago, I think, is a huge, huge plus for Auburn. And that's just a couple. You know, the secondary that is, I think, very talented and I believe underrated by a lot of folks out there. A lot of these guys, while young a year ago, got a ton of important minutes. And now they're, instead of the freshmen, they're the sophomores and juniors in that. And getting Champ Anthony back and healthy, I just think Auburn. I think Auburn's secondary is could be one of those spots where we go, man, that's a lot better than we thought it would be in this season, and it will certainly get tested and early.
Oh, I agree with you, Andy, and it's funny. I mean, I said the same thing when Dan was asking us. I want to watch the guys up front, but there are some things We got to see so many new faces this spring. There will be a few more, and I want to see the guys that we haven't seen before. You mentioned the quarterback spot. Ashton Daniels will be out there competing. Right. But on defense,
we didn't really see Xavier Chaplin.
No,
I mean,
you're right. I mean, we didn't see him going through any of the contact workouts. But on defense, the additions of Jay Hardy and James Ash up front, Caleb Wheatland at linebacker, Rayshon Pleasant. Right. They're in that loaded secondary. I think all those guys are expected to be able to come in and play, and I would think pretty significant minutes.
I don't think there's any question. I love Auburn's depth in the secondary, and especially getting Champ Anthony back. And when you add a Rayon Strader and a Rayshon Pleasant, two proven guys that have not played at Auburn. And also, what does Pleasant give you as a returner?
Absolutely.
I mean, you know, he's garnering some preseason awards or preseason accolades, I guess is a better way to put it, as a returner. So, listen, there's a lot of questions to be answered. And it starts tomorrow, and it's going to be hot, really hot, tomorrow afternoon for that first practice. And we'll get a chance to watch these guys a little bit and hopefully a chance to talk to some of these guys after practice tomorrow, but I'll be very interested in what Hugh Freeze has to say before everything tomorrow morning.
Andy, one of the positions you mentioned was tailback, and the fact that Auburn is going in with kind of it's more of a question mark than it's been in years past because of the returning production you had from players like Jarquez and Tank. And even Booby Whitlow, right before getting back to carry on, like it's been that's been a sure thing in or something like a sure thing in a lot of seasons this year. I find myself really rooting for Damari, and part of it is what a great interview and the fact that he's been a great leader, and it's part of it's about character, part of it's about the fact that he stayed in a climate where he probably could have pursued more playing time somewhere else. I think he's the fact that he finally gets his opportunity as seemingly the top guy on the depth chart at that position. We'll see what Jeremiah Cobb and we didn't see Darrell Robinson. Right, you think about guys guys in the spring we didn't really get to see the UConn transfer running back plus the two true freshmen. But I'd love a breakout season from, if you want to call it that, from Damari, because it would seem like he's an overnight sensation, but he's really not.
When I say tailback is a question for me, I that can be a little misleading because I don't think it's a question in my mind because of lack of talent there. It's just that we don't know who that guy is going to be. And of late, we've always known, whether it was Tank or Booby Whitlow or Kerryon or a year ago in Jarquez, we knew those were the guys going in. And perhaps it is. I mean, and perhaps we learn early, or perhaps we learn in fall camp that it's Damari or Jeremiah or a Darrell Robinson, who we've not seen yet. The last time we saw him play, he was playing for UConn at this point. So when I say it's a question mark, it's just because there isn't that guy, at least in my mind, perhaps there is in Auburn's mind, going into the season. Perhaps we learned that very early, that it is Damari or Jeremiah or one of the other guys at this point. So I don't want to mislead and say that Auburn doesn't have talent there, because I don't believe that's the case. I think Auburn does have talent. It's just, who is the guy that's going to emerge as the tailback for Auburn coming into this 2025 season?
Well, one of the things that's changed, though, it seems, in college football over the past few years is there are fewer and fewer workhorse tailbacks. It seems like young running backs don't seem to mind as long as they know they're part of the offense and can factor in and can still make plays, but you don't see as many guys getting getting 25 plus carries a ball game as you used to.
And you see more tailbacks now that are better all around backs and not just guys that are the workhorse, 25 to 30 carries a game and and they're chugging it out, but also guys that they can get out of the backfield and get to the sideline on the wheel route or whatever and become that all-around offensive threat for Auburn. So to me, that's and I think in both Alston and Cobb, we know that both of those guys have that ability for you. And with year three of the Hugh Freeze offense and the Derek Nix offense, does Auburn go more to those backs out of the backfield as receivers than we've seen in the past with Jarquez and Tank in the last couple of years? So, in what is, I think, a very, very important season for Auburn football, there's a lot of opportunities. Maybe that's a better way to put it. There's a lot of opportunities for some of these guys. And from to me, Cobb and Alston are two of those guys that have great opportunities going into the season.
Well, I mean, you look at the roster, and this roster, there's more talent. There are more players, I think, that can make plays on this roster than we've seen in a long time.
Agreed. And you know, one other spot is the tight end spot for Auburn. Because, you know, with Rivaldo Fairweather, you had a guy that was that hybrid tight end that could be a very, very good pass receiver. And then you had guys that were really good or were better as blocking tight ends. You know, just about everybody's gone from a year ago. I mean, Brandon Frazier is the only one back, and he didn't play much last year after the broken foot. And it's a spot now where we see Tate Johnson full-time, a guy that has played both guard, center, and maybe a little bit of tackle offensively, that now is out of a tight end full-time. So how does the tight end role figure into this offense this year with guys like Frazier and Johnson and Hollis Davidson, Preston Howard, a couple of the newcomers that are part of this offense as well? And a lot of that also figures in and factors in because we know how good this wide receiver room is. And it's as good as it's been in a long, long time. And, you know, does it live up to the billing? Mm-hmm. You know, does it live up to the billing of what we believe the potential is for this wide receiver room? Guys, you know, Perry Thompson and Bryce Kane, do they step up even further? Does Cam Coleman take that another step up in his sophomore year? Malcolm Simmons, what role does he play for Auburn this year? And then there's Eric Singleton Jr. that has garnered great attention after a fabulous career at Georgia Tech and blinding speed. How does that figure in, and how does that help Jackson Arnold at quarterback to have those kind of targets to throw to, and I think a better offensive line to protect him for Auburn this year? There's so many questions going in.
So many questions, go ahead.
I do like the talent level of this ball club, and we've heard so much this summer about the recruiting, and I understand it, but you can have, I think there are times where you try to separate what's going on in the summer months from what the roster is going to be in the fall. And there's no question that Auburn has to pick up its recruiting efforts. I think it will. But that doesn't take away from the talent level potentially that this Auburn ball club has.
Yeah, and you may need another line. I'm sorry, I was going to say you may need another line on your depth chart. I think there are more guys that might be able to play this year than we've seen over the last few years.
And I was working on depth chart today, and I don't think I've got everybody I need to on this on the
right
board that I'm looking at right now. But that's what the next couple weeks are for. I'll have a chance to make those changes, and hopefully we're, you know, Auburn stays healthy. I mean, health is obviously an enormous factor for any team, including this Auburn ball club going into this season. And I'm sure that there are going to be some that make that big step forward, some that are surprises for Auburn in a positive way in this season. Well, we've not touched on the linebacker spot. And really, as far as Auburn is concerned right now, I mean, the biggest experience for Auburn is DeMarcus Riddick,
right,
the sophomore out of Clanton. Now, there are some experienced names They have not played for Auburn yet, but a Caleb Wheatland. Mm-hmm. How does he step up after transferring in from Maryland? Robert Woodyard Jr., how does he, you know, in his sophomore season, you know, does he make that jump? How does J.J. Falk get some looks like his brother is at the defensive end spot? Those are two spots in defensive end and the buck or the edge that we really didn't talk about. And it's kind of like the wide receiver room. Those are spots that you feel pretty good at going into the season with those guys up front. So, you know, it's this time of the year, Bill. I mean, we're through media days now. We get the first press conference with Hugh Freeze tomorrow morning. We get out there for the first practice, and a lot of these questions will begin to be answered for Auburn football. And obviously, we'll be paying very close attention to it over the next four weeks as we get ready now for that opener down at Baylor on a Friday night.
No question about it. Andy, can you stick with us for a few minutes?
Yes.
Great, because want to touch on some basketball news and talk a little wrap-up of baseball as well. We've got to get to our bottom of the hour break. Back with Andy Burcham for a few more minutes here on the Tuesday Drive.
Like a sports leader, ESPN 106.7.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio, Drew at the controls, and we have a few more minutes with the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham. Andy, I know you're a Cardinals fan, but, I mean, really sad news in Major League Baseball yesterday with one of the class acts. I know he was an arch rival, but Ryan Sandberg passing at the age of 65.
Well, the game that he had...
Oh. I was watching that game with a Cubs fan down in South Alabama when that happened.
That was a Saturday afternoon game. It was the national game of the week. Bob Costas and Tony Kubek were on the call, and it was one of the great games I've ever watched. Disappointing as it the way it ended, and you know Willie McGee hit for a cycle in that game and drove in six, but Ryan Sandberg stole the headlines with two huge home runs late to tie it, and then the Cubs eventually won as a really good Chicago Cubs team. Yeah, really class act. I mean, just, a class act and a classic ball player for the Cubs and Ryan Sandberg, who later went on to manage and in minor league baseball and a little bit with the Phillies as well. But, you know, I thought he did things the right way, in spite of the fact that he played for the Cubs. but how could you not admire what he did in his career, the manner in which he went, in spite of the team that he played for?
No, he was absolutely a class act and really sad to see him passing at 65. Yeah. Speaking of baseball, I mean, I think when you look back at it again, now I guess players still have an opportunity to do something before classes get started or before August 1st, which is just Friday. But another excellent job by Butch Thompson and his staff of retaining players and retaining signees. I mean, retaining players from last year's class and keeping the bulk of the signing class.
You know, we talked about last season and how that outstanding recruiting class, they lost no one. And they've done it again this year. They just didn't lose anybody. And I think that says something about what this program has become. It does not hurt that it is an NIL era. It does not hurt now that Auburn will be able to offer scholarships to baseball players, full scholarships to baseball players, where it wasn't able to do that in the past, as it's becoming a fully funded sport. I think it also says a lot about Butch Thompson and his staff. We talk about retaining staff, and the day's coming that Carl Nonnemaker is going to get an opportunity to be a head coach somewhere. It's probably the same thing for Gabe Bruce. But the fact that staff has remained stable, that this program has remained stable, and, you know, you lose a little bit to the draft this year. Eric Snow was one that they really wanted to get back, but was highly thought of and highly enough thought of that he has gone on now to pro ball. But all those guys that are coming back, these youngsters that are coming in, Bill, this is a sophomore class. To me, it reminds this. This sophomore class reminds me a little bit of the class that Casey Dunn was in And he played, a lot of those guys played a ton as freshmen in 90 or 96. And then in 97, that was the team that would, now it didn't hurt you had the National Player of the Year
in
Tim Hudson as a senior. But that class was the core for years to come. And I think this sophomore class has the potential to be the same with Bub Terrell and, you know, that the pitchers and your catchers and outfielder. I love the way this team is put together going into this season. And how did, you know, a guy that we never saw throw a pitch last year, but in that class a year ago that was as highly thought of as anyone in Gatwood, that has played this summer, has pitched this summer, you know, how does he figure in to Auburn a year ago or next year? And that's a guy that we never saw because of injury throughout the 25 season. So, as disappointing as the end of that season was, to me, it does not take away with what was a very special season in Auburn, and I think what is being built for the future of Auburn baseball. And hats off to the contract extension for Butch and his staff as well. I think that's money certainly well spent by Auburn.
And the eye for talent necessary to do it the way Butch did it, right? I mean, to build something that doesn't seem like it was a flash in the pan, but rather something that could be sustainable because you have players with multiple years of eligibility remaining all over the roster and potentially making up, you know, several of your weekend starters in conference play. And I know it's not as prevalent in baseball as you see maybe in football, but I think the fact that you were able to hold on to seemingly everyone, at least as far as the transfer portal goes, being able to keep everyone who seemed like they were in your plans moving forward on the team and in the fold, it really speaks to the coaching staff as well as how positioned Auburn might be in the NIL space and the revenue sharing space in college baseball.
I agree. And I think it's probably more prevalent than you think as far as those players looking elsewhere and being wooed by others. I think we would be naive to think that doesn't happen on the baseball landscape. I think it does, but it says a lot about Auburn. And guys, I mean, it was a record-setting year for Auburn in the ballpark with a record, you know, attendance for single games, for series, for the year. And I don't see that changing as we move forward. And I think they will look for more ways to put folks in Plainsman Park again this year. And what has become, I think, one of the premier baseball facilities in the country. And a couple of years ago, it was not. Not that it was a poor facility, it did not have the features that it does now. Finally, those, you know, the room on top of the War Eagle wall, the back 40, the premium seating with the Broadway Club and the 984 Club and the Hall of Fame Club, which is now going into year number 3. So hats off to Auburn for making that available, and that the Auburn family has certainly responded to that.
Oh, no question about it. And the excitement is probably about an all-time high. I mean, you know, I've seen Auburn predicted in the top 5 preseason.
Yeah. We're a long way off from February, but yeah, that is fun to see how others are from outside are now viewing this Auburn baseball program.
That's right. And then there's basketball news today of another exhibition being added, Auburn playing Memphis at State Farm Arena.
Yeah, one of two trips to State Farm Arena for Auburn this coming season. Auburn will go back for a holiday Hoopsgiving in December, and we'll face St. Mary's in that holiday Hoopsgiving game later. But the two exhibition games are as good as I remember, Bill. I mean, with Oklahoma State at Boutwell Arena in Birmingham on the 15th, I guess it is, and then a couple weeks later getting Memphis at State Farm Arena in Atlanta. And that's two just outstanding basketball programs. And with the move a couple years ago of being able to take advantage of these exhibition games to help raise money for some folks in doing so, and now being able to then play outstanding opponents in these exhibition games. So I think that's certainly a win-win for Auburn to get both Oklahoma State and Memphis in those two exhibition games. And, you know, then it starts in early November, and, you know, you've got Houston at Legacy Arena in Birmingham. We already know that both Oregon and Michigan are on tap for the tournament out in Las Vegas before the Iron Bowl. North Carolina State in the SEC-ACC Challenge. The St. Mary's game, Purdue at Gainbridge Arena in Indianapolis, a Purdue team that I think will be preseason top five. So, you know, with a practically brand new team other than Tahad Pettiford, boy, there's a lot of work to be done, and I'm not sure that Auburn's had a more important summer as far as culture, as far as just getting on one page as it's had this summer, considering it's practically a brand new team, albeit very, very talented, but a lot of pieces to be put together before those exhibition games, the first being in October.
It would be totally legitimate for a voter to have, in some order, Purdue, Houston, Michigan, and Florida as their top four. Auburn's gonna play all four of them this year. Three of them in the non-conference, and Florida when SEC play gets rolling. It's really gonna be something. And it's you know, at least you have those exhibition games and three home games against mid-majors who might be a little bit overmatched before that Houston game, because it's going to – I would understand why Bruce Pearl would want a runway here, because it's Tahad and a brand-new team around him.
Well, and I think it'll be a different style team this year. You just made mention to it, Dan. I mean, you know, you don't have the big guy in the middle, two big guys actually in the middle, like Auburn did a year ago in Janai. And Cardwell, Dylan, in the middle. I mean, and there was such a senior-led ball club a year ago. And this team is going to be so different in style, in makeup, and the one constant is Tahad Pettiford. And in some ways, I kind of think it's his team. As a true sophomore, going into this second, there's a lot of pressure on the young man, but doggone it, he handled the pressure pretty well a year ago. I think of his best games, typically they came on the road.
Biggest games.
In some of the biggest stages that Auburn played in front of all year long. He didn't seem to be bothered by that at all. So I look forward to getting to know this team a little bit and watching it develop. And this could be a team that is playing much better in February and March than we see in November and December.
Yeah, there's
because
no question.
It will have been played. It will. I think this is a team
they should
that
know each other by then, right?
Absolutely.
Bruce will know them, and then the combinations, and they will know each other. Andy, I think anyone listening can tell. I mean, a lot of excitement for the entire season. Yeah. Andy's going to be there at the mic for as much of it as possible. You already got some of your schedule sort of mapped out. How you're going to be able to get everything done.
It looks like I, for the second straight year, I will not miss a basketball game because of football.
That's great.
And we did not last year. I think it will work out this year. The only question is if Auburn makes a run in football and plays in the SEC championship game. Mm.
Well, I hope it's a concern. I hope there have to be some adjustments there, Andy.
But beyond, I think I'll be able to make every football game, every basketball game, and then we'll get to baseball season. And of course, Brad anchors our coverage on Auburn baseball. It's not just these three sports that I get to call at Auburn. But I'm excited for soccer, which has its first exhibition match or friendly, as they call it, on Saturday, just two, three days after their first practice with James Armstrong. I really look forward to what Larry Vickers does with this Auburn women's basketball program. And you talk about putting together a brand new team, and that's basically what he has done. So I think there's a great deal of optimism across the board with Auburn Athletics, and we get to listen to Hugh Freeze tomorrow, and it's going to be very interesting what he has to say about this Auburn football game.
Oh, absolutely right. As we head into the 25-26 athletic season, tell us about what's going on talking Tigers and so forth.
Yeah, our Talking Tigers podcast this week features the director of the Auburn U program, Dr. Robert Carlisle, who grew up in Detroit, Michigan. He played Division II football at Grand Valley State, played in two national championships there, and is now in charge of this Auburn U program. And it is a highly needed program at Auburn and everywhere. And it deals with the student athletes at Auburn, not only on the field but off the field, and not only while they're at Auburn but after they're gone from Auburn as well. And we explained that this week. And then Bill, Dan, coming up starting Monday, a two-parter with a man named Ronnie Baines, who played football and baseball at Auburn back in the '60s, played for Paul Nix and Chris Jordan at Auburn, went on to become a fabulous
long time
high school coach, football and baseball at Tallahassee, and then got into the officiating world, started in the high school level, made his way to the SEC, and then I think 16 or 17 years in the NFL. Mm-hmm. And he worked two Super Bowls as an official. He is part of three generations of officials in his family, and two of his sons are NFL officials and have worked a Super Bowl. Another is an ACC official, and now some of their sons are getting their feet wet. And Ronnie Baines is my guest on the Talking Tigers podcast starting on Monday. And then we'll be getting it. We'll be getting after it. By the way, our first Tiger Talk will be August 18th. Mondays during football season, and our first will be August 18th. So looking forward to that.
Absolutely. Looking forward to all of that, Andy. Really appreciate you spending some time with us, and great to have you back with us here on The Drive.
My pleasure, guys. Have a great day. War Eagle!
Voice of the Tigers, Andy Burcham, joining us. We'll get to our final break of hour number one. Stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
And Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online.
Yeah, you can do that and get in line for hour number two. Don't forget, hey, we've got Jake Crane of Crane & Company joining us at the bottom of hour number two. But until then, we'll open up the phone lines, 334-321-1390, as we're halfway done here on the Tuesday Drive.
Tell you what, if you missed any of Andy Burcham in the first hour, podcast The Drive presented by Southeastern Industrial Contractors. Really appreciate Southeastern Industrial Contractors. Andy was phenomenal. Check out the podcast wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
We are back with hour number two. Come on in and join us here on the Tuesday Drive.
Production. Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome in to hour number two of the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio with Drew at the controls. Hope you will join us. Hour number one, we had a good visit with the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Andy Burcham. Andy had gotten a little time off for his summer break because, yes, it's about to get really busy with football practice getting started. He's been doing the Talking Tigers podcast a couple of weeks away from the first edition of Tiger Talk, and then obviously the first game of the year will be 4 weeks from Friday night in Waco, Texas. And with word today that it's 101 in Fort Worth this afternoon, don't know how much that had to do with the change in Auburn's practice plans. Auburn had been scheduled to be practicing in the morning at least the first couple of days because we're only getting we're sort of getting practice scheduled week at a time, and we will hear from Coach Freeze tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, And then there was to be practice afterwards, immediately afterwards, but it has been moved to 3:30 tomorrow and Thursday afternoons with player interviews to follow. So we're working it out. Dan's thinking he may be able to make practice tomorrow.
Yeah, I got to start hydrating now, though.
Yeah, you better.
Yeah, no, I'm going to have to start. You know, we're going to have to get me the IV
tonight. We'll see if we can get Coach Dunn in tomorrow, because Jason obviously will be over at practice as well.
And he's somebody in our defensive line coach, Coach Don Dunn. He's somebody who's done football in Waco before, and he'll tell you.
True.
I mean, he knows up, you know, his time in the Big 12 and his time, you know, traveling around. You know, he knows his way around, and so he'll tell you about how tough those conditions can be. And Auburn's headed into those conditions in just a few weeks.
So that's coming up tomorrow. So we will obviously let you know, and then hopefully Dan can be on in hour number two to give us some thoughts as to what he's seen out there. Now, remember, the first couple of days are going to be in shorts. They won't have, you know, the shoulder. They'll add the shoulder pads and helmets a little later and then go into full gear, but it will be really hot. I mean, look, let's face it, it's going to be hot, period. Although, as you were saying yesterday, looks like we're going to have a little more comfortable weather as we head toward the weekend. I don't know that what the practice schedule is beyond Thursday, but we will we'll see, and we'll keep you updated on that.
Well, it feels like 90 in the Auburn Opelika area right now, according to an iPhone. It
says
it feels right now, and so if these were the conditions tomorrow. Yeah, you just say, oh, it's just 90, but, you know, it's
practice would be over by this time tomorrow.
Right, that's true. But it would be.
It's hotter at.
Yeah, about an hour. Yeah, about an hour ago, you know, is where it would have been. And you're right, things have cooled down a little bit. So it probably, I'd say it's probably, you know, 3 or 4 degrees cooler than it was hour and a half ago. Ballpark, but that's.
There's also a slight chance of rain, so I think there's a little more clouds today than we may have tomorrow.
Right, so we'll see, and if it gets dangerous, right? They have the indoor.
Yeah,
they have the
they
indoor
do the
as
air
an option.
Conditioned indoor, which they can, you know, part or all the team can be in there.
Yeah, I mean, we saw some practices last year with some pretty gnarly weather outside,
yes.
rain and storm wise. You know, I don't know how many times they decided to move it indoors for heat, but they probably could have made that call as well. But like you said, you probably want to be as safe as possible about acclimating yourself to what's going to be a couple of really foreboding atmospheres, not just from a fan, you know, noise, because we ask that question sometimes. Of coaches, you know, how do you simulate the noise that you're going to face in Norman or in College Station or in Waco? It's also about how you're going to figure out, you know, how's your team going to be ready for the heat? And I think you can practice indoors as much as you want. Is that the best way to get ready for an outdoor game in Waco on August 29th? You know, I think you probably want to have that in mind while also keeping safety at the forefront, and I'm sure they'll figure out a way to do exactly that.
Yeah. So practice gets started tomorrow, and we'll keep you updated on that.
We always talk about how are teams the shoes on the other foot, because we always talk about how teams are coming to Auburn early in the season, and what are they doing to get ready for a 2:30 game at Jordan Hare.
Yeah. Now you have two teams that should be aware. They're more than aware. They are dealing with this kind of heat and humidity, all the time.
You don't really have a team that's thinking about in the SEC or in major conference college football. You have the two teams Auburn plays in week two and week three, but you don't really have a team thinking, well, how are we going to deal with the heat and humidity of East Central Alabama as part of playing at Auburn? Because the Georgia game's at night.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like you don't, and that's a bit unusual, because usually you have, for a long time it was LSU, right? You had that early day game,
and it would be at night in Baton Rouge, but it seemed like it was always in the day at Auburn.
And there are a couple of Auburn LSU games that are among the hottest
Oh, yeah.
I can never remember Jordan-Hare Stadium and the
I'm still telling you, the hottest game I've ever. I've seen some folks on boards asking questions. Hottest was Jackson, Mississippi against Ole Miss.
Yeah, what about Auburn? What about in Auburn? Is there an Auburn Day game that comes to mind?
There are quite a few. I don't know that.
USC was tough.
USC
wasn't
was.
It? I mean, I think maybe the fact that immediately they were turning up the pressure on the field was making it worse. There were people. I know that Ferguson's told this story before. Like, there were people being carried out of the student section in the Joe Burrow 18 LSU.
Mm-hmm.
That's LSU comes back early in the season.
It's usually that those September conference games, and that's what I still
04 and 06.
Maybe,
yeah,
maybe is because, and I guess it was the 90. I guess it was 1990. When Auburn played Ole Miss and Jackson. Maybe it's because I was having to wear a coat and tie. I was in the athletic department. But, I mean, there were literally, I mean, hundreds of people were carried out. They ran out of ice pregame. Pregame.
The city is out of ice.
I mean, it was unbelievable. All right, we're just underway. Did want to update you again. We mentioned this in hour number one. J.G. Tate of AuburnSports.com. I'll just read you what he wrote earlier today, this morning on AuburnSports.com there on the bunker. He wrote, "Today's report day for Auburn football, as if that really matters anymore since kids train year-round, and I'm expecting a full roster to report." He goes on and says, "I say that because the expectation is that Malcolm Simmons, who was arrested last week on a domestic assault charge, will practice with the team." He writes, "This is important news. He is a projected starter at wideout and certainly will be in the running for a starring role on special teams," and concludes saying, "Auburn and law enforcement continue to work through facts associated with the case, but it appears for now that Simmons' football career will not be affected negatively." So that's what J.G. wrote earlier today. And we've talked about, you know, we've been talking about it. This could be an opportunity. I mean, still, Auburn's going to use multiple receivers. But if Malcolm Simmons is there, yes, it's hard to say yes. He wouldn't be one of your starters. I mean, Malcolm had an outstanding freshman year this past year. We'll see. I'm sure Hugh Freeze will be asked that early on in the press conference tomorrow morning.
And as I mentioned in the first hour, without knowing anything more about the situation than anyone else does, this, you know, publicly reported stuff,
mm-hmm.
I would think that just because Malcolm Simmons is practicing doesn't necessarily mean that he's going to escape any sort of team or program-related discipline for his involvement in this situation, even if the situation goes away. Right, like even if this thing is, you know, even if this thing is ultimately if it fizzles out in court, that doesn't necessarily mean Auburn or the you know, Hugh Freeze and his team can, you know, can expect. I think that's a separate situation,
right,
as to any sort of criminal. And so, I think that doesn't, as we said in the first hour, seeing Malcolm out there tomorrow doesn't necessarily mean
that you'll see him out there with the first unit or even on the travel roster
when Auburn plays Baylor.
334-321-1390. That's the Drive Hotline, sponsored by Skybar. Let's get to it. And Daniel is up first this hour. Hey, Daniel.
Hey, gentlemen. I hope y'all are having a great Tuesday.
The AC's working, man. That's the most important
thing.
That's
right. We're rather comfy.
Yeah, Dan, I'm sure you'll get your IV ready. Hey, I wanted to ask, as far as coaching jobs and the coaching landscape within the SEC, in y'all's opinion, what is the biggest sleeping giant coaching opportunity in the SEC? In other words, a program that has a big ceiling or high ceiling, but obviously just isn't there.
I mean, I think there's a ton of programs with high ceilings. I mean, I guess isn't there is kind of relative, because, like, is Florida there, right? Like, I know some folks would say Florida should never be, like, that's a program that probably should never be worse than 8-4 on a given, you know, on a regular basis.
I would say probably the biggest one is the one that people have been expecting for the last 4 or 5 years and still thinking this could be the year
A&M?
For Texas A&M.
A&M, yeah.
Wow. I was thinking Florida or Oklahoma, but A&M.
I don't think Oklahoma's sleeping. I think Oklahoma, I mean, you look at the last 20,
you
25
never know.
Years.
I mean, but the last few years they've been up and down.
No, I mean, I know Venables probably hasn't won the way folks became accustomed to winning, but like you look at Bob Stoops's win-loss record or even Lincoln Riley before he left, like Oklahoma has, it's not, Oklahoma's not Nebraska as far as like its history being in the ancient past. Like Oklahoma is a team that, I mean, even Venables has a 10-win season. Right, they were a 10-win team in 23 and came into the SEC with it. So I see what you're saying, and I think it's just hard to think of Florida and Oklahoma like probably teams that have underachieved very recently compared to what they could be. You could say the same thing about Auburn, right? I think Auburn's probably in that mix as far as the last four seasons being
Auburn probably. I mean, we're so close to it, you don't think about it, but Auburn is the team, you know, they're one of those six that have always been right there competing, contending.
One of the Rhett Lashley six.
And he came back and stuck with it and said that absolutely still proves that they're top heavy. But anyway, Auburn's one of those halves that has not been over the last 4 years. So they're probably, I would think, positioned to make the biggest jump from those teams that you're talking about, if you're talking about a possible, big jump into contention.
Absolutely. As far as a Dillingham or Rhett Lashley, maybe they have two good seasons coming up, and you can define good in their respective leagues however you would like. Say the Arkansas job or the Kentucky job opens up. Do you think that either one of them would bite at that job or wait and just continue in their current roles and then wait for a better opportunity down the road?
I don't think the SEC – well, how about this, Daniel? I don't think the SEC and the Big Ten have ascended to the point where even the worst jobs in those leagues are better than anything anywhere else.
Yeah, I think Rhett –
or Dillingham,
Arkansas might interest Rhett.
He's an Arkansas guy.
Yeah.
Feinbaum was standing
up. I don't know that Kentucky would be.
Apparently,
he'd jump at.
Yeah, I have not read into this too much, but I saw a quote circulating that Feinbaum said Rhett Lashley had been undermining Sam Pittman for a while in hopes of eventually getting the Arkansas job. I don't know what exactly is going on there. So maybe, and Rhett Lashley has Arkansas ties. Mm-hmm. So maybe that would be a situation where if Arkansas wanted him and you know, he saw a disparity between the SEC and the ACC, you know, that was only going to get worse, maybe jumping to that job would be right. In general, I think it would be tough for Arkansas or Kentucky or State or Vandy or, should they need a new coach, I think it would be tough for those programs to lure a highly successful Big 12 or ACC coach unless there's an extenuating circumstance like that. Dillingham to Kentucky would be a bit of a surprise for me because he's got something rolling in his alma mater, and if he keeps winning, could be a much better job than Kentucky coming for him eventually. And if you go to a place like Kentucky and you don't win, it's kind of the end of the upward trajectory.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
You know, I think Dillingham in particular is probably going to be very careful about the next place. Since he's been hands-on at places like Oregon and Auburn, and now he's got his
Florida
own like, in Florida State, I think he's going to be very careful about where he goes next. John Sumrall probably belongs on this list as well. Winning at Troy, winning at Tulane, highly respected in college football.
Yeah, of course. Red and Kenny have been to the college playoff.
Yeah, and John Sumrall is probably somebody who,
but he will,
is maybe more attainable for either Arkansas or Kentucky, especially Kentucky.
That's his alma mater.
Especially Kentucky.
Absolutely. Well, hey, I'm just going to go ahead and call it. Dillingham is going to Penn State this time next year, maybe a little sooner, but this coming off season. Thanks, guys.
Now, that's really interesting. Where's James Franklin going? Are they
out the door? Are they going to underachieve? And I don't know.
I mean, if they, I mean, They've been good for they've been good for 9 wins, but they need to win more than that.
I mean, I like Kenny Dillingham. I liked him as a boy genius at Auburn, 5 or 6 years ago. Happy to see that it's working for him at Arizona State. Would love to see him stay at Arizona State and build something. Know that's tough. Know that SEC and Big Ten jobs like Penn State could be after him. I really hope that's a situation that just
it'd be interesting. I mean, I guess it doesn't matter where you're from or where you've been, because that's the one area of the country that he hasn't lived and coached in is the Northeast.
Is the thing
because he's a native of Arizona who has been in the South a good bit.
But is the thinking that if you carry a big enough profile nationally,
it doesn't matter as much.
I think it doesn't anymore.
I don't know, it used to more than it does now. I mean, football is it's a national game, and it's like recruits go anywhere. So, I mean, I think coaches can relate to players all across the country if they're good. If they're good coaches. Yeah. They can relate to some. They can relate to all of them.
DeBoer wasn't from too many. He wasn't too regional, right?
Nick Saban.
Nick Saban, yeah.
He did okay when he moved south. 334-321-1390.
I don't think Lincoln Riley had coached anywhere near Southern California before USC poached him from Oklahoma.
Have we gotten to our first break? Brett, hang on. We want to give you plenty of time. We'll get to our first break right back with more here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive, Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. Online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio. Drew at the controls. Brett, if you get a chance, give us a call back. We lost Brett there during the break. Love to hear from you. We've got a few minutes before we get to the bottom of the hour, and then we'll check in with Jake Crane of Crane and Company. I'm surprised we haven't had calls from people on the, their take on the word that Malcolm Simmons is going to be practicing tomorrow. Yeah. I mean, I'd heard other people on other shows talking about that, but I'm a little surprised. I think people just are like, let's wait and see.
Yeah, I don't want to trivialize the nature of the charges against Malcolm, and it's a serious enough situation that I would have understood virtually any decision by Auburn if they said, we're going to sideline Malcolm until there's finality. If we're going to have Malcolm available in practice and with the team, does not necessarily mean he's playing in the game against Baylor. There are different outcomes here. But I certainly understand why folks would have might be surprised by might have thought that it would have been the easier thing to do would have been to. Would have been to sit Malcolm until the charges were pending. But again, if you decide, you're satisfied with what you know about the situation and you think you can handle the discipline element without removing him as a participant in practice, I think that's understandable too.
And the other thing is, as I said a little earlier, I mean,
I'm trying to avoid rushing to judgment on the situation.
It's a lot different than if this came up during the season. It's then you almost have to say, all right, we have to wait and see. Right now, you're still in that. Either I don't know if they're still in the gather information stage or not. Maybe they have enough information to be able to make a decision. Maybe we'll find that out tomorrow from Hugh Freeze. But regardless, there is not any competition that he would be a part of it, with the exception of practicing against his own teammates.
And I don't know if Malcolm's status as seemingly an important part of the team factors into the decision making here, where it would be easier to part ways or make a more harsh decision if it was someone who
there'll be a lot of speculation about that. There's already been some, but DJ Barber, it's not the same.
That's not a comparison of a one to one.
That was like, no. There was obvious, that was something that was right there in front of the law enforcement that stopped them. You know, I mean, they saw what they saw.
We also don't know if it was DJ Barber's first strike internally or not. We don't know Malcolm's standing in that regard either. You know, I just think I would, you know, like I said earlier, I want to avoid a rush to judgment here. And I think, it's a situation where, I don't think the policy anywhere in the conference is, it's clear cut and a player facing a charge like this is dismissed from the program. Like, I don't think anyone, so I don't want to hold Auburn to a standard no one else in the conference is facing either. I would think that if this thing doesn't go Malcolm's way in court, that the situation probably changes for Auburn as far as what.
Oh yeah, well if that were to happen, it might not even be a football or athletics decision. So I mean,
you're familiar with Auburn administration, yeah, that's true. And that's, you know, there are multiple hurdles to clear. In that regard.
334-321-1390. That is the drive hotline. We're going to get Jake on here in a few minutes, and I doubt we'll talk an awful lot of baseball. We're a couple of days away from the Major League Baseball trading deadline, and there have been a few deals, but Dan, it seems like there are an awful lot of players that have been listed as these guys are going to be traded. Not even could be traded or probably will be traded, but there are a lot of players who it has been just taken as, you know, it's a matter of fact that they're going to be, but they're not. Is it the situation you think that the teams that have those players don't want to make a deal until they know they have the best possible return?
I'd play it to the deadline if I could. You know what I mean?
Yeah, as long as you know you're going to be able to make a deal.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's maybe seeing if someone's going to raise their price, or maybe seeing if someone's going to, if someone's going to lower their price. You know, as you get closer, it's a little bit like scalping tickets, right, Bill? Hey, you get a little, you know, there's
sometimes you get, but when you get right to kickoff or the opening tip or first pitch, that price drops crazy. Yeah. So you may not want to wait until 4:59 on Thursday.
You can understand why the sellers right now, getting back to baseball, you understand why the sellers right now aren't ready to part with what they aren't sure is the best deal.
They think they can get one more piece or something just a little better.
You better time that right.
That is right. 334-321-1390. Back to the drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar. And Pat is up next. Hey, Pat.
Hey, guys. Just wanted to chime in a little bit on what y'all just said. I know you only got a couple minutes. But, okay, so this is my opinion, and it's totally my opinion. I'm just basing generalities. Take the name Malcolm out of the picture, okay? If I'm a coach, if I'm a business owner, and one of my employees, okay, I'm going to say that they're employees technically, okay, they get arrested, okay, and that's fine. Everybody can get arrested. I can get either one of y'all arrested just by making an accusation. It's legally, you can get someone arrested just on accusation. Go down and sign a warrant or sign a sworn statement. It could be a total lie, and they can arrest you. Okay, so I'm not saying it's not true. I'm not saying it is true. What I'm saying is, as an owner, as a person, there's no way that I would not take that employee, and they can say, "Oh, plead the fifth." Well, plead the fifth, and you're fired. Okay, so it's a no fault state. You can fire anybody for any reason whatsoever. So if you ask the employee, you say, "Hey, tell me what happened." Okay, if they lawyer up, well, then you got to let them go. I mean, it's as simple as that. If they say, okay, coach, this is exactly what happened, okay, I was wrong, but she was wrong too, or whatever the story is, at that point, you have to make a decision as a coach or as an owner. Okay, do I believe that he was right, or do I believe that he was not wrong totally? And at that point, if I say yes, I think either she was lying or it was a bad situation and the person's a really good person, you can make the decision to keep them on. And that's that. I don't think there's any way you would keep the person on if they were guilty. If they were guilty of doing something bad that was enough to get arrested for, I don't think there's any way that you keep him on. So the fact that he's still on the team tells me that there's two sides to the story. And trust me, there people get arrested all the time, and it turns out that it wasn't true, or that that person started it or whatever. So I'm just saying there's two sides to the story, and I think if he was in the total wrong, he would have already been gone. So I think that's just information to dwell over. I'm not saying that it might turn out where more information comes out or something like that, but I feel like it's not as cut and dry as everybody jumped on at first. You know, hey, he manhandled this person or whatever. I think there's got to be more to it, or else he would have been gone. You just, as an employer, you just don't. If someone's going to go off like that, you just don't keep them. I mean, you just don't. It's not good for your program. It's not good for your business. So I feel like there's definitely, it's not as cut and dry as some people were trying to say it was. So anyway, that's all I was saying.
Appreciate the call, Pat. We need to get to our bottom of the hour break. We're going to check in with Jake Crane of Crane & Company on the other side. So stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
I'm at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan here in the studio, Drew at the controls, and we'll head back to the drive hotline and welcome in our good friend from Crane & Company, Jake Crane. Hey, Jake, how you doing today?
Oh, man, doing fantastic, guys. As usual, appreciate y'all having me.
Jake, we are, we've been getting closer every week to actual college football for the 2025 season. Take another step tomorrow when Auburn gets going with preseason practice. It's not fall camp anymore when you're talking about mid-afternoon on July 30th in Auburn. But it's less than a month before Auburn Baylor.
Month from today.
Yeah, Auburn Baylor in Waco. Yeah. And you want your team to be ready. You probably need to get them, have them practicing in those kind of conditions.
Oh no, without a doubt. And obviously, you know, this time of year is different than it used to be back in the day when we talk about the amount of two-a-days and things like that going on. But you know, guys, I'm really intrigued with this Auburn team in this first matchup. And I know some Auburn fans would rather play a smaller school or whatever to get that win out of the way, but you just don't want to be fooled, right? You want to know. And I think Baylor, they're very talented. They got a good roster. You're going to hear about Sawyer Robinson a million times. They got some problems on the edge of the line of scrimmage on both sides, which I think Auburn can exploit. But what a good litmus test, not only for Auburn in general, but for Jackson Arnold, too. You know, it's not going to be like Alabama A&M where you beat them 85-0 and everybody thinks this team is great and Peyton Thorne's turned this amazing corner. You're going to have a good idea, not that teams don't get better or teams don't get worse throughout the year, but this is a great litmus test right off the bat, especially on the line of scrimmage for Auburn. And after it, Auburn fans, it'll be a good compass to know where this team is going or where they're capable of going.
Yeah, I mean, today I saw where On3 is picking Baylor to win the Big 12.
Yeah, well, I mean, you look, it's not just On3. I mean, Phil Steele, there's a lot of people that are really high on Baylor. And, you know, when you look at Baylor last year, they turned it around. You know, they had a really bad year the year before with Dave Aranda. But they turned it around in a way you wouldn't really have thought they would have turned it around. It was more offense. And that was
absolutely
after losing starting quarterback to Quan Finn early in the year. And then Mississippi State transfer Sawyer Robertson comes in there and does a really, really good job. The receiving core is really talented as well. We'll see what happens with one of the hardship waivers with the wide receivers, but they're pretty deep there. They got a couple transfers in that are talented. Where, again, though, I think Auburn, and it's been a while since you've been able to say this about Auburn in a big matchup, on the edge of the line of scrimmage especially, because Baylor's three interior offensive linemen, both guards in the center, are as good as Auburn's going to see. I'm telling you right now, there's a couple NFL guys in there, maybe all three, but at the tackle position, and then on the edge of the defensive line, I think Auburn has a huge advantage. And when you run the type of system that Auburn does that can exploit that edge, do not be shocked if Auburn goes after the edge early and really kind of test Baylor to see their will on that part of the line of scrimmage. And I would rather have the advantage. And Auburn's wide receiver room is better than Baylor's. Let's not get anything twisted. Now, we'll see what happens with Malcolm Simmons. But even without Malcolm, I'll take Auburn's guys. But it's that edge of the line of scrimmage that you really need to watch in this game. And I think Auburn can and should take advantage.
Hey, the other thing that is going to be really interesting, you know, Xavier Chaplin, the Auburn offensive line has gotten a lot of love here from, you know, from players and coaches. And, I mean, what we've seen of Xavier Chaplin is, boy, he's impressive looking, but we haven't seen him with any contact at Auburn. This offensive line needs to be better. It should be better. But this is what this is an opportunity to prove that they are.
No, without a doubt. And look, you turn on the tape of Xavier Chaplin. There's a reason he's mocked to go in the draft where some people think, most people think he's going to go. The guy can do it. He is an older guy. He's played against tough competition. He's really good on his feet to be his size. And I think he's going to be the best tackle that Auburn's had in a while. You know what you got with Connor Liu, with some of the other guys. Without a doubt, this should be the best offensive line that Auburn has had in at least the past four seasons, and it's not just the starters. That's the difference, guys. It's depth. Auburn actually has depth. Not that there isn't a drop-off in that second group, but even as the first group has gotten that much better, the most important thing is the drop-off to that second group isn't super vast. So Auburn has a lot of advantages in this game. It's just how well can the new guys mesh. That's what fall camp's for. That's what the summer's for. But there's no more excuses that, oh, we're just not ready from a personnel standpoint. You got the guys to go do it. Now you got to go do it.
Should we be making a bigger deal about Auburn's need to replace Jarquez Hunter? Because he was such a big part of the offense the last two seasons. And you're going to guys that seemingly have talent in Damari Alston, Jeremiah Cobb, Darrell Robinson, the UConn transfer, two really exciting true freshmen. But it's largely unproven, especially compared to what you had out of Jarquez the last couple of years. How much of a concern is that for you for Auburn in 2025?
Well, anytime you lose a player of Jarquez's caliber, you know, you worry about replacing it. But, guys, if Auburn has a viable passing game, then it is going to make losing Jarquez a lot less painful, which was, again, last year, and I'll give some kudos to the offensive line. A lot of it was Jarquez running through contact. Everybody knew that Auburn couldn't throw the ball very well against anybody worth their weight, and Auburn was still able to run the ball with success. Imagine if Auburn has a capable passer behind a better offensive line. You can have a little bit of a drop-off at running back and actually run for more yards and be more lethal as an offense. So if you want to find a way to make up for Jarquez Hunter leaving, be more balanced in the passing game with a better offensive line, therefore keeping the defense off balance, and you have a quarterback that can run once again. That's also a big deal because it makes the defense, it puts them in conflict at multiple positions and multiple angles. It slows down defensive ends. It slows down nickels with their eyes. That's where I think Auburn can make up for Jarquez Hunter and could be a much better offense overall.
Well, I mean, they just have so many more pieces, so many more players
for sure
that can make plays. I mean, guys that are potential playmakers. I mean, you know, Auburn's been fortunate in the past that they had one or two. They've got, you know, they appear to have, you know, a half dozen or so guys among the receivers, backs, and quarterback that can make plays.
Well, I mean, yeah, look at wide receiver. Having Cam Coleman and Eric Singleton Jr. alone is basically the Sidney Sweeney version of the wide receiver 1-2 punch. Then you add in some of the other guys, and you hear about some of the young guys. I think you're going to hear more about them in this fall camp. But it's the ability to test the defense at all three levels at any point in time. It's the exact same thing as a pitcher being able to locate three different pitches on any given count. You can't bracket everybody, you can't double everybody, and you can create the matchups. That's what it forces. Football is a game of matchups, and when I have multiple threats, then I can put you in a situation, and believe me, I've been on the other side of this as a defensive guy, where they know the matchup they want, and they can get in a formation in situations and get it. That's what Auburn hasn't been able to do. But with Jackson Arnold, he's got to prove that he can make those throws, go through those reads in the RPO, and that's where getting protection from that offensive line, I think, will really calm him down and will get his timing right and get him comfortable.
You can pick, I guess Cam Coleman's like the obvious one, and you can sort of go in generalities here, or you could talk about a specific position. Auburn's got a lot of guys that got a taste of college football action last year, their first taste of college football. Now they have an offseason to sort of grow and build on that. Where do you usually see development in a guy after his first year of college football? You know, his first offseason as a veteran in college football.
Well, a lot of it goes into the preparation. You know how to prepare better because you know what to expect. You know, anytime you go up a level in speed, obviously things are moving faster around you and you can be late to react. Now that you've acclimated yourself, and that goes for any position group, offensive line, linebacker, DB, wide receiver, quarterback, now that you know the speed and you're able to calibrate yourself to the speed, you're able to prepare better because you're more comfortable. You understand what it's going to take to be able to play at a high level. You look at a guy like Connor Liu, for example, especially playing the center position, where you're having to help out the quarterback, help set the protections, call out the blitz and linebackers, call out who's Mike, who's Will, who's hot. Having to do all that and at that speed and then snap, step, and block, you know, that's a lot on a young guy, but he knows what to expect now in this league. So a lot of it is the preparation, because the way you prepare is the way that you play.
Jake, we were asked a little while ago, a caller wanted our thoughts, and love to get yours as well, as to teams that you feel are poised to make a big step. He was talking about sleeping giants, so we were thinking about teams that had been there before and were down, and I said, well, you got to include Auburn in there because they've been down for the past 4 years. But I mean, you can have Auburn in that group, but I mean, who are some teams you feel are poised to make a big step forward this year?
Who is Jake bullish on compared to maybe the field?
I like Oklahoma a lot.
Yeah.
You know, I said it, you know, literally 5-6 months ago. Now it seems everybody's jumping on the bandwagon, not because of me, but because people are finding out, you know, the personnel that they have. And then when you look at the injuries, how anomalous that was for them last year, that doesn't happen 2 years in a row. Bill Biedenbaum didn't put a great product out there on the offensive line, which is like a once-in-a-generation situation. So I really like Oklahoma, even with a really tough schedule. And, guys, with that schedule, if it works out right, a 9-3 Oklahoma team could get in the college football playoff. So I'm really bullish on Oklahoma. Looking outside of the SEC, you know, not that Texas
didn't
Tech
you, weren't
has
you,
been
you're, aren't you an A&M guy as well? Aren't you thinking? I know that's
yeah, to a certain point, you know, I don't think they're going to win the national championship. It just surprises me that I think some people forget it was Mike Elko's first year and they're a couple plays away from playing in the SEC championship game, and Marcel Reed's coming back, who wasn't ready to play but came in and did some really good things, and I like the personnel they have on the line of scrimmage. But looking outside of the SEC, there's a couple teams people need to keep their eye on. Texas Tech has a loaded roster in the Big 12. Joey McGuire has built this team finally exactly like he wants it, and if Baron Morton can stay healthy, that dude's got some witch in him. Louisville is also a problem. Miller Moss is a great fit for what Brohm wants to do. Isaac Brown is one of the best running backs in the country that nobody is talking about. He's got Olympic speed, and they finally got some pieces on the line of scrimmage that you feel like from a depth standpoint, they could really do some things. So there's a couple out there that I am bullish on.
That's a really, really good coach. I know we easy to draw the connection there, but Louisville's got, I mean, we were talking about Kenny Dillingham earlier in the show, who's another guy at his alma mater.
Yeah, that's exactly right, guys, at their alma mater.
You know, but it's, you know, there, and there's you know,
we're going to have opportunities to move up.
Yeah, but boy, yeah. they're
he
doing.
He does more with less than Charmin Ultra, man. It's really impressive how he's able to continuously put out a good product.
Great stuff, Jake. As always, can't wait for the start of the. Can't wait for the start of the college football season. We'll be a little bit closer with Auburn starting preseason practice tomorrow. Tell everybody where they can find the work you do.
Yeah, really easy. Look, talked a lot of Auburn. We got a big Auburn Baylor preview that's out there as well. Just go to Crane & Company. It's CRAINN Company. Got a full Auburn preview, and tomorrow we're dropping our top 10 revenge games for 2025. And you best believe Auburn's on that list with somebody.
I hear you. Great
you
stuff.
Don't, you don't break that many eggs last year, right, without making a few enemies.
That's exactly right.
Great stuff, Jake. Thanks a lot, man. Have a great week. We'll talk to you again next week.
All right. Y'all be good. See y'all.
Jake Crane from Crane & Company joining us as he does Tuesdays at 5:30. We'll get to our final break. Stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive. Experience and knowledge from the pros.